Eddie Chavez, Ruben Nava, and Jesse Romero. Jesus 911.
Good morning, Jesus 911 on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. My name is Ruben Nava, my partner Jesse Romero. We make up a two-man car, and today we have a special guest. So we have a three-man car. Henry Romero's with us today, brother Jesse, and he's Jesse. Good morning, Henry. First of all, good morning. Okay, we're getting his sound together, but you know, Henry's like what you see on the news when you have a pursuit going on. They call the expert in to go ahead and call the pursuit from the air or from his couch. These experienced people who have seen these things. We have Henry in here to talk about some new information has been released on the George Floyd murder, and it could be a game changer. So we're going to talk about that all day on the show today.
And Ruben, again, I think that's the whole point of this show, that I want to talk about it, because, and we may even disagree in that, which is okay. I don't think I know it's not a murder. I would say that right now. I'd put my hand on 1,000 Bibles and say, because when you read the definition of murder, it doesn't fit the qualifications. And I think this is what the whole show's all about, based on new evidence coming out. Let me check. Henry, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me introduce this one article that I want to get everybody's feedback here. And I've already kind of staked out my position. As I recall, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, you guys still live in California. What's the definition of murder? 187 PC in California. It is the killing of another human being with malice aforethought, correct?
That is correct. Yep.
Okay. Well, based on that definition, I think from day one, you're never going to get a murder conviction. But if we look at this article, I'll tell you why this has been politicized and who knows how this case is going to turn out. But here's what the article says. The article says, Tucker Carlson announces George Floyd fatally overdosed with fentanyl, and a lawsuit is brought to force release of hydroxychloroquine to the public. Now, when we last time all three of us had talked, I didn't know how much fentanyl this guy had in his body. That wasn't even an issue in my mind.
Right.
As I talked about it, and I even wrote an article for Church Militant. But this article to me is a game changer. And Ruben, you work narcotics, so you know a whole lot about this stuff.
Yep.
Let me read the first paragraph, then I'll take it out. Let Ruben, you start making some comments. It says, YouTube censors took down Tucker Carlson's George Floyd broadcast. Why do you think they did that? I would say because Tucker Carlson gave a balanced view of what happened, and that's not allowed under this liberal progressive climate. The article says, here's a related doubleheader today. Okay, Tucker Carlson on Fox News announces the What I and John Paul Leonard, that's the writer of this article. The writer of this article, his name is Paul Craig Roberts. I don't know who he is, but he writes some pretty good articles. I've read some of his stuff in the past. So him and his buddy John Paul Leonard wrote this article. He says, both of us told you guys 2 months ago, George Floyd fatally overdosed with fentanyl. Now a lawsuit is brought to force release of the hydroxychloroquine to the public, which is the second topic. And the rest of the media continues to lie to protect the anti-white agenda, the big pharma's profit agenda. Ruben, you and I talked a little bit about this a while back ago, and you actually gave me a mouthful about the whole fentanyl thing. I want to hear what you have to say now that we have this information, then what Henry has to say. Again, because they're trying to pin a murder on this arresting officer. Again, I don't think it fits the qualifications of murder based on the definition in any state. And now this announcement, the fact that this guy was as high as a kite. Ruben, what does that do for your perspective if you were sitting on the jury as a civilian? Could you convict this guy of murder based on what you know about fentanyl and the amount of fentanyl he had in his body?
No, you know, in fact, the last few years of my career, fentanyl really came to the forefront. And we've even started a fentanyl task force, and there were so many police that were being overcome by it, by finding it in the field. Just, you know, a small trace of it to maybe it was, it touched their hands, got through their pores, got, you know, or they breathed it in, and guys were going down, man down. So they were taking precautions, and they were giving us, you know, the guys out in the field, they were giving them equipment to use. And one of our dogs was killed by it, you know.
Wow.
And so in 2017, 59.8% of opioid related deaths involved fentanyl, compared to 14.3% in 2010. It's a powerful synthetic opioid, and it's similar to morphine, but it's 50 to 100 times more potent, and some even say 200 Whoa. Times more potent. And so it's synthetic. So there is a medical use for fentanyl, what's being used on the streets, it's being made, and they're lacing other drugs with it to enhance the high. I know that heroin is commonly laced with fentanyl, and meth, and sometimes cocaine, and it affects all parts of the body. And it includes like extreme happiness, drowsiness, nausea, confusion, constipation, sedation, problems breathing, that's a big one, and unconsciousness.
Key in on that.
People are dying from fentanyl, and it's just to give you an okay, it's been said that 3 nanograms per milliliter is enough to be a fatal dosage. That's the size like of a pinhead, you know. When you unpack a shirt, some of you guys, when you get a shirt out of a package, you've got these little pins that keep the shirt all folded up. Just think of that little pinhead that's on top of there. That amount could kill you. George Floyd, in the toxicology report, revealed that he had 11 nanograms per milliliter, which is almost 4 times what would kill a person. So so when you see that, plus he had methamphetamine in his system, and when you see him on the videos that were released, and we'll get into that, you see that he was already dying. He was already going through this, you know, downward spiral before the police even contacted him, before they even took him to the ground. So this is a game changer. The way he had been using drugs, in the amount that he had in his system, irregardless, in my opinion, irregardless of what the police did, if they even ever contacted him, this guy was on a spiraling downhill and may have even died without any police intervention.
So. Ruben, let me ask you a question, then I'll turn it over to Henry. Ruben, do you believe also that the fact that the attorney general
he's a winner,
didn't want to release the entire video, it wasn't released until recently, Keith Ellison, the Minnesota's attorney general, do you believe that him withholding the video, and now that we've seen all of it, because I know you have, I'm going to ask Henry also, we've seen all of it, do you believe that once again, this is going to be a game changer for the jury? Because he was clearly passively resisting from the very first second they contacted him.
Yeah, it really is. It's exculpatory evidence. It was going to have to be released in court, but Keith Ellison, the attorney general, he used to be a congressman. He's from Minnesota. He's the attorney general now, and he has aspirations to move up politically. So
he wants to be president.
He's tight with the Obamas, and he even admitted that he kept the video from the public so that he could it would garner him favor in a prosecution to bring charges against these. He's trying to change he doesn't want the people to see this. He wants the outrage to, you know, proliferate to you know, when you're cooking your carne asada, you want to, you know, put the spices on, you let them marinate. He wanted the people to marinate in this outrage before this ever even was brought to our attention.
And it did happen. He got his wish.
Yes, he did.
Henry, so let's go. Let me ask you a couple questions. Do you believe that the fact that now we know the fact that George Floyd was under the influence of fentanyl, not speaking as law enforcement, but speaking as a juror called in, and seeing that this he had toxic amounts of fentanyl to kill him, to cause a heart attack, to cause him to stop breathing. That's the first question. Would that be a game changer for you as a juror? Second question. Now that you've seen the entire video of the arrest, do you believe, again, that's going to be exculpatory evidence for at least three of the officers who they're all, if I'm not talking about the actual arresting officer, I forget his name, Chauvin. But the other three rookies that were there basically following their training officer, do you believe that the entire video now paints a different picture, and there probably wouldn't have been riots had people been allowed to see the whole thing from beginning to end? So those are the two questions.
Again, let's go back real quickly, guys, and look at what is the narrative that the riots were used. BLM used the initial video basically to indicate that the police again unjustly killed a black man, and the 8-minute video that shows, or 9-minute video that shows, where these guys got his knee on his and him screaming, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." If you just look at that video in and of itself, you're right, BLM, you know, they have probably it looks awful.
Yeah, the optics are awful. Yeah.
What?
Hold on, let's, yeah,
go ahead. We'll be right back. We're gonna keep getting into this. If you want to hear the rest of this, we'll be right back on Jesus 911.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God, and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Baby move in your tummy?
How does the baby eat?
Can the baby hear me?
How did the baby get in there?
Wow, a pregnancy can sure generate a lot of questions, but what's important is that a baby is a baby, inside and out of the womb, not just after birth, but 9 months before, at conception.
That's right. Every baby is a miracle. Hello, my name is Marianne Kuharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America. If you know someone who is pregnant or in need of alternatives or assistance, or would like to support the work of Pro-Life Across America, please visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org, or better yet, simply dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword pro-life. Pro-Life Across America is non-political and totally educational.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, we've got a three-man car today. We got Jesse, Henry, and myself. We're talking about the George Floyd case. We're revisiting it, and some new information has been released, and we have to bring it to you. Go ahead, Jess, or Henry.
Yeah, Henry. So go ahead. Tell us about the fact that, as a juror, the fact that this guy was high as a kite, he had so much fentanyl in the system. I think a good prosecutor is going to be able to make the case to a juror, or a good defense attorney, excuse me. He's going to say this guy died of basically a heart attack as a result of the fentanyl, the large amounts of fentanyl in his system. His heart gave out way before, you know, he made contact with the officers. He was already dying. I think that's what's going to be the defense, and I think it's going to be a pretty good defense based on science and based on medicine. And also, the second question is, now that we've seen the entire video, I mean, I'm looking at these cops. They were treating him with kid gloves from the very beginning. No punches were thrown, no arms twist, nothing. They were treating him literally, I mean, with kid gloves, like if he was glass or something, made out of glass. So what say you about those two points?
Well, again, like I said, that's the problem with forming opinions just based on limited information, which is what the whole BLM movement based their whole whole movement about, was that, one, there is systemic racism; two, the cops were racist and they intentionally killed George Floyd. The videos, when they come out, they are exculpatory in the sense that they actually show a lot more. They show the incident from beginning to end. And you are correct. Remember that use of force is never pretty, but use of force is, again, something that it's reactionary for police officers. We use force based on how the other person is reacting. And the guy, you're right, he was passively resisting, in the sense that he didn't want to get in the car. They were trying to get him in the car. He didn't want to put his feet in, doing everything that he could have done. And again, if you look at how he was responding on that videotape, like Ruben said, very clearly, he's showing signs of impairment. The call came out that the guy looks like he's high on something. If you remember, the guy that made the call made that initial assessment, and he's a civilian. So based on even a civilian's, he makes the initial assessment that the guy's on something because he's not acting right. And sure enough, the impairment is very, very obvious once you start seeing the video. He's having a hard time grasping simple commands. He's argumentative in a sense. He's not thinking clearly. If you notice that the other two people that were in the car, very, very responsive to the police officers. They did everything that the police officers asked of them. They were told to get out of the car. Do you guys have any ID? They had conversations with them. And again, they responded without a problem, you know. And but Mr. Floyd, or George Floyd, you could see that he was definitely impaired or doing something. And the evidence, like I said, the new evidence shows that the officers were simply reacting to how he was, you know, what he was doing. They didn't want to get in the car. At some point, they ended up having to pull him out of the car and lay him down flat. And again, did he die from a drug overdose? You've got two conflicting. I think you're gonna get two conflicting death reports.
Right?
Yeah, one is a hired gun, a hired expert, and the other one is done by the state or by the county. And you're gonna see two very conflicting reports. It's evident that one of them, they did toxicology. They actually looked for signs of trauma in that area, so anything that could have caused him to die. They couldn't find any of that stuff. And yet you got the conflicting one, the one that was a hired gun, that says, oh yeah, he obviously died from being choked to death. That's going to be very interesting. You got very conflicting. And what's the evidence going to prove? Like you said, Jesse, I think the evidence is going to show that there's going to be, it's going to support more the county's view of how the of how the person died, rather than how the hired gun thinks the guy died.
Ruben, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I think you're right. You're absolutely right, Henry. The what's interesting when you watch the video, how many times George Floyd says, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." You know, I'm claustrophobic. He didn't want to get in the car. I'm claustrophobic, and the officer says, "I'll put the windows down. You know, I'll put the air on." And oh man, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. This is before he's even gone ground. And what's interesting is that if you remember when they approached the van, the windows were up. He was locked in his van. So why is he now saying that he can't go in there? It's because he's impaired, you know, and he's He's not speaking rationally. He starts calling for his mama. You know, his mom's been deceased for a couple of years, I guess. And then even one of the officers, as he's when he pulls him out of the car and he's has him on the sidewalk, he even asks him, "What are you on?" You know, he realizes this guy's not something wrong with this guy, and he notices that there's a foam around his mouth. You know, and that's a lot of people who use drugs. What it is, it's a physical symptom, you know, and it occurs when there's an excess amount of saliva mixes with air and gases to create this foam. So frothy saliva, it's a rare symptom. When you see it, you should be concerned and immediately call, you know, a doctor or get some medical assistance, which the officers did. In fact, they were already, you know, they had already called twice for medical assistance before he even went to the ground. You know.
I think all three of us have seen frothy mouths in the field before, and every time you see that frothy mouth, it concerns you because you know something, he's on something or she's on something, and it's going to be, you know, a fight to get them to even respond to you in some sort of form. You got to also remember what the guys were doing. You know, George Floyd was conditioning the cops. Ever hear the old adage of, you know, crying wolf? Mm-hmm. And well, he was crying wolf the entire time. Yeah. I can't breathe. I'm claustrophobic. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. They put him down on the ground. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. The cops he conditioned the cops to not believe him because that's what he was screaming the entire time. I can't breathe. I can't breathe.
Right.
So there's a lot. You know, there's a lot to say that again. We react to how suspects react to us, but. In this case, he started conditioning the cops really early on in this incident. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And they're going, you're standing up. There's nothing wrong with you. So, you know, you hear, I can't breathe. Now he's lying down. The cops are thinking he's just saying the same thing.
He actually says, put me on the ground. When they start putting him in the car, the other guy, one of the officers goes to the other side to help pull him through. And he's just, I just want to go to the ground. I just want to be on the ground. And so they put him on the ground.
Yeah, they appease him. They do exactly what he asked of them.
Right. And so, you know, if they realize that he's in distress. And so excess movement, fighting is going to acerbate the situation. So in my opinion, and this could be, I know I haven't, the officers haven't said so, but they could have just been trying to restrain him so that he would not go, you know, pass out. Before, you know, the paramedics could get there. So by keeping him on the ground, and by the way, the position with the knee on the neck, it obviously wasn't cutting off his circulation because, you know, both of you martial artists, how long does it take for somebody to go out when you got a chokehold or something on a karate?
Quick, it's quick.
Quick, right? Seconds, 10 seconds maybe, not even 10 seconds.
Not even 10.
Yeah, so... They were on him for 8 minutes. That wasn't, he wasn't blocking his airways, you know, and he was keeping him, Shelvin was keeping him down so he wouldn't keep flopping around and moving and making the situation worse. He was trying to, you know, in a sense, trying to calm him down so that he will be able to last until paramedics got there. And obviously that wasn't the case.
You made a very key observation right now, and that's the third part of this whole thing. You've got a lot of evidence coming forward. Obviously, the new video puts a different perspective as to what we're seeing. It surely takes away the narrative of he was killed because he was black, and that takes that narrative away. At no point do you see the officers at any time make any derogatory statements against him.
No.
There's nothing that they do to show that there is prejudice involved here. This was simply an arrest of an individual who was trying to pass phony money. They were going to try to put him in the car. It was nothing. And they reacted again to Mr. Floyd. Mr. Floyd didn't want to get in the car. He wanted to get put on the ground. Again, non-responsive in his actions. The third area that still needs to be addressed or to make an actual decision is what are the statements of the officers? What were they thinking when all this was going on? And that's going to be very key as to whether there's intent at any point to hurt the guy, which I doubt most officers when we're in the business. Again, like I said, we are very cognizant of due process, the 14th Amendment and the 8th Amendment, cruel, unusual punishment. We're not there to administer any kind of street justice. We're there to try to take somebody into custody is what we're trying to do and nothing else. And try to do it as expeditiously as possible. But you're right. The last thing that we're waiting for is what exactly was going through the minds of the officers. That has not been released because I don't know if the officers have even been interviewed. I mean, how do you interview somebody that you fired?
Yeah.
You know, you can't force them to talk. And that's the other problem with this whole thing. They fired these guys very, very quickly without due process. They were not given any due process at all. And now, again, it's coming out that there is exculpatory evidence that can explain everything that was done by these officers. And the city is going to have a hard time denying them the ability probably to get the job back.
The city is going to get hit with a big, fat lawsuit. These four guys are going to come out with a nice big paycheck because, again, they were railroaded. They, like you said, just because you're a cop doesn't mean that the Constitution doesn't apply to you anymore.
Right.
They weren't given due process.
Right.
And they did this. It was a knee-jerk reaction by the government, by the police department, by the attorney general, basically just to try to throw red meat to the sharks out there, BLM, Antifa, and all these other anarchists. And also to throw red meat, I think, to the mainstream media. Let me read this one part of the article here, and I want to get you guys' take. It says, as Minnesota's black attorney general, Keith Ellison, clearly admits on Tucker Carlson, he withheld the police video of their encounter with Floyd in order to aid his prosecution of the police officers who he falsely indicted. In other words, the video does not support the indictment or the official story that the despicable Lion Press, this author writes this, have beat into your head by endless repetition and misrepresentation. Second thing I want to put out there. The video clearly reveals an agitated and uncooperative Floyd complaining of difficulty breathing long before the infamous knee on neck, a routine restraint part of police training. Okay, let's take that statement. This is a very true statement, and this is, I think, it's what's going to give the defendants, they're going to walk out of court because this is an absolutely true statement. He's uncooperative, number one, but number two, he's complaining of difficulty breathing way before Chauvin puts his knee on his neck, which shows that the fentanyl was already killing him. And then it says here that this is a routine part of police training. I don't know what they train in Minneapolis, so I want to get both of your guys' take when we come back about, is this part a routine part of police training, and about him complaining of breathing long before the knee on the neck. I want to get both your comments on that in the next segment. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Jesse Romero from the Terry and Jesse Show, also from Jesus 911. Let's face it, we all need to use the internet, but we need screen accountability. Why? Pornography is a huge problem, especially on the internet. And every time we tap into the internet, we get bombarded with images and temptations that degrade our humanity. So we need Covenant Eye to block these pornographic sites and advertisements from infiltrating our lives. Covenant Eyes helps us take custody of our eyes and custody of our intellect. So I recommend you go to CovenantEyes.com and type in the promo code VMPR to support the network. Protect yourself and your family from the imminent threats on the internet. www.CovenantEyes.com, code VMPR, live porn free. Thank you for listening to Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Thank you. God bless you. Keep the faith.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And here's an easy way to support us by going to smile.amazon.com and type in Catholic Resource Center or Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And when you log in your Amazon account and you purchase products, a portion of it will go right back in supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it doesn't cost you a dime. I want to thank you ahead of time because that supports us year-round. May God bless you and your family.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
We are back, Jesus 911. You stay ready, you don't have to get ready. We have with us a special guest, Henry Romero, a trained forest expert. He's a former commander on our department, retired commander, and Jesse's brother. Jesse, a lot of people are commenting on, and Henry, were commenting on your other brother, Johnny, who did a tremendous job out there in Ventura, speaking on behalf of trying to bring the St. Junipero Serra back, statue back. So,
yeah, Johnny's out there, he's fighting against these anarchists that are trying to destroy statues. So I'm proud of my brother Johnny. He's out there standing up for the Catholic Church. Putting his neck on the line, as he usually does.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, Jesse, you were commenting that these guys are going to walk. Well, I'm not...
I'm saying, Ruben, out of the four are going to walk.
Okay,
is no way that anybody on planet Earth is going to convict the three rookie cops of first... Because, remember, they're overcharging them.
They're being charged.
They're overcharging them. They're not going to get convicted of first or second degree murder, the three rookie cops. And so once you got a hung jury, we're not going to get a conviction. They're going to walk. Chauvin's another case. I think they're going to make a political scapegoat of him, but you're not going to get a first degree. Looked at Minnesota.
He's been charged with second degree.
Okay. They're not even going to get a second degree murder, in my opinion, Ruben.
Well,
and I'm not a betting man, but I'll tell you, cause I just looked it up right now. Let's see what is second degree murder. Okay, according to Minneapolis law, it says here, according to Minnesota law, murder in the third degree, which is
got charged with, and they upped it.
Okay, so it says it got both definitions. Murder in the third degree is committed when there isn't intent or premeditation. Mm-hmm. A typical use of the third degree murder charge would be used against a person who fired a gun into a crowd or drove through a crowded sidewalk. It says here, whoever without intent to affect the death of another person causes the death of another by perpetrating an act eminently dangerous to others and evincing a depraved mind. So they're going to have to prove that this guy, that Chauvin, had a depraved mind, because that's part of the statute. Without regard for human life is guilty of murder in the third degree. So you're going to have to prove that he had a depraved mind, which means he had a mind that was so evil that he wanted to kill a black man that day. Now, the rest of the part, the rest of the statute, you could argue, somebody died without intent, at the hands of another. I just find it's going to be very difficult to prove, number one, that he had a depraved mind. And number two, I think a good lawyer is going to be able to prove to the jury this guy died of fentanyl. He was already complaining that he couldn't breathe. He didn't die at the hands of Chauvin. And furthermore, you can't convict my client of third-degree murder because he doesn't have a depraved mind. He's been a cop for 19 years.
Jess, do you have the second degree? Because that's what they upped it to second.
Second-degree murder. It says a person can be convicted of manslaughter in the second degree if they can prove one of five means stated in Minnesota law. One of five means. And here, so here's the five means.
I believe it was a manslaughter, right, Henry?
Second degree murder. Well, I'm looking at Minnesota statute. It says manslaughter in the second degree. Yeah. I just clicked on it. That's what it says this. A person who causes the death of another by any of the following means is guilty of manslaughter in the second degree. Number one, by the person's culpable negligence whereby the person creates an unreasonable risk and conscientiously takes chances of causing death or great bodily harm to another. Okay, that's going to be argued. That's a possibility. Two, by shooting another with a firearm or other dangerous weapon as a result of negligently believing the other to be a deer or other animal. Doesn't apply. Three, by setting a spring gun, pitfall, deadfall, snare, or other like dangerous weapon or device. Doesn't apply. Four, by negligently or intentionally permitting an animal known by the person to have vicious propensities or to have caused great or substantial bodily harm in the past to run uncontrolled off the owner's premises or negligently failing to keep it properly confined. Doesn't apply. Five, by committing or attempting to commit a violation of Section 609, neglect or endangerment of a child, and murder in the first, second, or third degree is not hereby committed. Doesn't apply. The only thing that may apply is here. Number one, the person's culpable negligence, whereby the person creates an unreasonable risk and conscientiously takes chances of causing death or great bodily harm to another. That's going to be argued.
Okay.
Did Chauvin cause an unreasonable risk? That's going to be argued in court. They may find him guilty on that. Comments?
Well, Jess, I think we're looking at two different charges. I mean, you're reading the manslaughter. He's actually being charged with murder in the second degree.
I think that's what they call it there. It's called manslaughter in the second degree.
No, that's a separate charge. That's a whole different, you know, penal code section.
Okay. I'm gonna look at murder in the same state. Right. But keep on talking. I'll look for murder.
So it's causing the death of someone without intent to affect the death of any person while committing or attempting to commit a felony.
You have it there?
Well, it's right there in the article.
Okay.
Without attempting to commit a felony offense, while attempting to commit a felony offense. So, you know, like if Chauvin was trying to commit, assault on the color of authority, and it causes his death, that could be the death in the second degree. So he didn't mean to kill him, but because of his actions, it led to his death. So that's different. And what I was saying, Jesse, is that I agree. I think they should walk. What I'm saying is that I don't think we're going to find a jury that's going to do that. We're not going to find a judge that's going to have the guts to make that decision, because you know what could happen after that. We saw that after Rodney King's, the four officers were, released after the first trial and found not guilty. And, Bedlam, all heck broke loose out here in the streets of L.A. We could see the rioting start all over again. What do you say, Henry? You think that they can get a fair trial? Oh, Henry, your speakers.
You're mic, muted.
Oh, did I mute you guys?
There. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay.
It's somehow, again, guys, the whole narrative goes away once you start seeing the entire thing. It's going to be very difficult to get even a jury of their peers there in Minneapolis to even be able to sit down and listen to the entire facts. I venture to say that if I were the attorneys, I would petition for a change of venue.
Oh, absolutely, that's the first thing.
And the change of venue is going to be still in the state of Minnesota, but they might be able to get somebody that's not as attached to the actual city of Minneapolis and attached to George Floyd's incident. The optics of this whole case, that's what they're going to go ahead and rely on to actually, to Jesse's point, the optics of the case, is they're going to go ahead and try to get probably a manslaughter 2 charge, because there is no way that he is guilty of murder in the second degree. And again, this is just my humble opinion, but he had to have been trying to commit assault under the color of authority. And that's where I get, you want to see what is the state of mind? What is Mr. Chauvin's state of mind? And that's going to be very, very, very crucial as to whether they're going to be able to convict him of that crime. And again, remember, you got to remember, he doesn't have to talk. He can just go ahead and invoke his Fifth Amendment and let the evidence, speak for itself. So again, we may never hear that part of it, because he does not have to say anything about why he intended. The only reason they would get that out of him is if they coerced him into a statement via an internal investigation. most departments, if they're going to go ahead and do an internal investigation, which is being done, but you can't force an employee that you fired to, you can't coerce them to go ahead and talk to you, you know, because you fired them. But if he was still employed, they'd be able to get a statement out of him to be able to go ahead and get that information.
Right.
Here's what the article says. I want you to get your comments on this. The police realized Floyd was on drug overdose and called for paramedics. Floyd was being held still so as not to exhaust his restricted oxygen capability in agitation. So that's what they're saying. That's why they held him down, so he wouldn't exhaust his oxygen capability in agitation. Floyd died because the ambulance did not get there in time. When the top law enforcement officials in Minneapolis withholds exculpatory evidence in order to frame and convict innocent policemen and law enforcement officials, and the law enforcement official is black and the police are white, it puts a different color on the lies we have been told. Obviously, this guy's a conservative writing the article. I'm just reading it. But he makes a good point. The cops called for paramedics. So once again, there's no intent to go, today, we're all a bunch of white cops. Let's go and kill a black guy today.
Nope.
These guys were treating him with kids' gloves. These guys didn't put, you know, soften him up or put their hands on him or punch him in the ribs. They call the paramedics, and I'm sure they're going to say this in court, and it sounds reasonable to me, that they were holding him down so that he would not exhaust his restricted oxygen capability in agitation. Now, I don't know if there's any medical basis to that, but I'm sure that's going to be argued in court. What do you guys say?
Per his request. Wait. Per his request. I said per his request.
Yeah. You know.
Oh, did he request it?
No.
No, he didn't request it, right?
You know what? What I found interesting is that.
Oh, you know, he did. Ruben, he did say, take me out of the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he did. Okay.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, you're right, Henry. He did. He didn't want to. He did say, take me out of the car.
And he wanted to go on the ground. Yeah.
See, again, all these things, when a jury's sitting and they're unbiased, and they read the first and second degree murder charges, they're going to say, this prosecutor is overcharging. This is crazy. This doesn't apply to this case. Go ahead, Ruben.
I was just going to say, you know, what's key is the autopsy. You know, we got to get into that. We'll talk about what the state autopsy said, as opposed to the hired gun like Henry. It called him, you know, someone that was brought in outside. Not that he's not, doesn't have credentials, but he's being paid. So that's a whole different story. Be right back.
Leviticus 11:44 says, "Consecrate yourselves and be holy, because I am holy." St. Vincent Pilate said, "You must be holy in the way God asks you to be holy." God does not ask you to be a Trappist monk or a hermit. He wants you to sanctify the world and your everyday life. May God show us the path to holiness and help us to follow it all the days of our life. We'll be right back.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, blessed are the peacemakers, and we are talking about the peace officers out in Minneapolis who we may have been railroaded on this. And we're talking about the difference in the two coroner investigation. The coroner gave his take on it, and what he said was that the autopsy report said that there was no life-threatening injuries identified, no facial, oral, mucosal, or conjunctival petechiae, no injuries of interior muscles of neck or laryngeal structures, no scalp, soft tissue, skull, or brain injuries, no chest wall, soft tissue injuries, rib fractures, other than a single rib fracture from CPR that was given by Officer Lane in the ambulance, no vertebral column injuries or visceral injuries, incision and subcutaneous dissection of posterior and lateral neck, shoulders, back, flanks, and buttocks, negative for occult trauma. No trauma. No, this guy wasn't roughed up. It didn't even show that he was choked to death, you know. So we're going to find that George Floyd was suffering the effects of self-administered a toxic overdose of fentanyl, a dangerously powerful synthetic painkillers, signs of which include severe respiratory depression, seizures, hypertension, coma, and death. According to this toxicology report, Floyd, as I mentioned earlier, Floyd had over three times the potential lethal amount of fentanyl in his blood when he expired. And he said I believe it was seven times that he couldn't breathe before he was ever on the ground. And police called for medical services to render aid to Floyd. So they were doing what they were told to do. And the other thing is that every action that they took, you know, in my opinion, was in accordance with their official MPD training. And we're learning because the first time we spoke, Henry and Jesse, we didn't have that in our arsenal of putting our knee on the neck. But they do. So which set forth the procedures police officers are to use in dealing with the suspect who appears to be suffering excited delirium. These procedures, which include kneeling on the side of the suspect's neck, are designed to enable the police to safely subdue an agitated, incoherent, noncompliant individual in the throes of excited delirium. And real quickly, we know people die of excited delirium all the time, you know, in custody. And those some of the signs of the excited delirium may include, and you'll notice when I read the list of some of these symptoms, you could see that happening with George Floyd. He was, you know, these were coming out when he was contacting the police. Paranoia. He was paranoid to get in the car, right? He was afraid he was going to die. He even said that, "I'm going to die." Disorientation, disassociation, aggressiveness and combativeness, a fast heartbeat, hallucination, profuse sweating, he was incoherent speech or shouting, unexpected strength, typically while trying to resist the restraint, and hypothermia, overheating, and inappropriately clothed, having removed garments. Sometimes they, and if you notice, he just had like a tank top on or something. He was hot, you know, and that's what those drugs do. They cause your body temperature to elevate, and so profuse sweating. What do you guys say,
Ruben? You should be the defense attorney.
Oh.
You got all the data right there. You should email all this to the defense.
Oh, they got it, man.
Well, I don't know where you got this from, but you looks like you've done your homework. Henry, you got comments?
Again, excited delirium is one of those things that has been around for a long time. It was, in fact, cops started really being trained on this in the I would say in the late 80s, early 90s is when a lot of police departments really started focusing on that. And that's when things started changing as to how we, for example, hobble restraint was changed. The procedure for hobble restraint were changed. Keeping the people on the ground on their stomach was changed. Excuse me. We're officers were taught, put them down, arrest, hook them up, and then as quickly as you can, put them on their side. Because we don't want officers to get involved with this excited delirium. We're doing everything in our power to go ahead and alleviate excited delirium, at least on our part. So there's a lot of things that have changed in law enforcement. The only thing that's going to be problematic is keeping him on the ground for as long as they did. And I understand that they were waiting for paramedics. That's what they were doing, is waiting for paramedics. But just a simple turning him over on the side would have alleviated that. Hey, you didn't do anything. You were trying to kill him. And that's not what, I know that's not what they were trying to do.
No.
Because there's no, like I said, now that you see the entire context of all the video, they were just holding him there waiting for paramedics to show up.
That's what they're going to argue in a court of law. Their attorneys are going to say, and this is part of police policy. This is how they're trained. Now, the only thing that I would say, I know that all the training that I've ever received, we're taught in Los Angeles that you stay away from the windpipe, what's called, in medical terms, a trachea, or the windpipe in colloquial terms. That's what you stay away from. That's why they say don't put an arm bar, because it goes across the trachea, the windpipe. That's a very dangerous move. But according to Ruben just read their policy, this is allowed for them to do it. And it wasn't across the trachea. It wasn't across the windpipe. It was on the side of the neck. And so I'm just saying, Floyd is going to say, this is the way, Chauvin is going to say, this is the way I was trained. His attorney's going to say, here's the manual. He's a training officer. Here's what he's following.
Right.
This guy said, take me out of the car. They took him out of the car. They accommodated him. They called paramedics. They're waiting for him. I'm just going to tell you, the more you see this, the more you see that these cops really bent over backwards for this guy and treated the guy with kid gloves. For anybody to say, we're going to charge all four officers with first or second degree murder. What have you been smoking? What planet are you in? These guys did everything according to their training. The more and more I see, and I'm just saying, if you're a juror and you have the documents in front of you of police procedure and you watch the unedited video, you're not going to get a guilty conviction of Chauvin. That's all I'm saying. Comment, Ruben.
They shouldn't get a guilty conviction, whether they will or not, to make a statement in politics. But this is going to drag on. This is not going to happen before the elections. This is going to go on for months, maybe even a year or two. So we'll see what happens. But I don't see that the liberals on this BLMs and those Antifa that are, I just don't see their mind changing when they see the video. They're not even thinking like that. They're just hell bent on destruction and overthrowing the government. And This is not about George Floyd anymore. So they won't even have an open mind to look at this and say, "Oh yeah, you guys are right on Jesus 911." That's not going to happen, I don't think. It would be nice, but I'm not that hopeful for this younger generation.
It reminds me a lot of the Michael Brown case.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Michael Brown case?
Ferguson.
Yeah, but tell the audience, give us up the speed.
Just again, Michael Brown was walking in the middle of the street, and the officer, just told him, get out of the middle of the street. Michael Brown refused to. In fact, he started walking back towards the officer. The confrontation occurred. There is evidence that now supports the officer's contention that there was a fight in the radio car, and that and Michael Brown ended up getting shot while assaulting the officer.
Michael Brown on top of him.
Right. And so we've got the initial narrative is that Michael Brown was in the middle of the street with his hands up. That was the initial narrative that was it, that was being portrayed by BLM at the time. Just like in this one, you know what? The systemic racist cops killed George Floyd. And again, that's the narrative that they're trying to sell to the public. Unless you actually watch the entire videos, which I'm sure that half of America has not, because they're not interested in it, because the media is not showing that.
Right.
Media is shown the first 8 minutes, the optics, the ones that support the narrative of systemic racism. That's what they've shown on TV. And that's the problem, is that I have not seen one network show the exculpatory evidence or the additional evidence to show that things that, again, the media has a responsibility to present an unbiased case. They're supposed to present both sides. And the problem here is the media is not presenting the second side. And that's why, Ruben, you're right. We can hope and pray that that people will look at the second part of this video and then maybe form a different opinion. But will that ever happen? Not unless the media assist. And right now, it doesn't appear that the media is going to help out in any way for these officers.
Yeah, you have to go to conservative sites to try to find that video.
Tucker Carlson did put it out in his show, but they took it down.
Well, you could still go to the Fox. You could still see it on his Fox link, but you can't. There's a link in this article. If those who are listening, go to our webpage. Jesse has already posted the links that we're using to some of these articles. And they take you to other links. Tucker's show is, you could see it, but when they always rebroadcast a little portion of it on YouTube, that's what's been taken down, because YouTube is censoring the conservative movement. The doctors that were talking about hydroxychloroquine and all this other stuff, they're being censored. So that was taken down, and it's not surprising. You know, they're trying to dictate what people hear. They want to control the narrative, and it's unfortunate. The journalists are no longer journalists. They're another arm of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, they're advocates. It's an advocacy group.
That's right.
Hank, last final comments on this whole thing? Wrap up?
The whole, again, you know what? It's everything that we've been talking about is a plus for the officers. It's going to help them immensely. And again, if the media did their job, a lot of these protests, you know, that are currently still out there because of justice for George Floyd, which we all know it's a lost argument at this point. But this justice for George Floyd, if the media did their job as they're supposed to and presented the second side of this thing, things might change a little bit. It might change. And that's what I would hope for. You know, Seattle, Minneapolis, Portland, Chicago, all these places that are currently having problems, Denver. If the media just did their job, maybe we wouldn't have the continuous riots.
I think they look forward to going to these funerals so people like Obama can make political statements at the funeral, right?
Lord help us. God, come to our assistance.
Yes.
Hey, Henry, Ruben, take it away. Really good, Henry, to have you on our show again. Really appreciate you coming on.
It was fun, guys.
We enjoy it. I know our listeners enjoy it, so we have to do it again. Hopefully it's not another case like this, but
exactly.
You've been listening to Jesus 911, and we are turning the airwaves over to Gary Mishuta from Hands On Apologetics. Thank you for listening, and remember, we'll be out at the cathedral from 11 to 1 on Sunday, peaceful protesting and praying to open the churches fully. God bless you.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great High Priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.